Hello and welcome to The Dive, Season 8, Episode number 9. We just completed Super Week.
How super was it?
So that was like less than Superman, but more than...
What's another super thing?
I haven't really adjusted to the new time change yet. It's still a little early for that. Supercalifragilistic. It's more super than that.
Okay. I don't really know how super that is, but I'll just say okay and move on.
That's some Mary Poppins. It's like super old movie, so yeah. It's not very super anymore.
We had the end of the regular season. It feels kind of crazy. It went by very, very quickly.
I got a new one, and I'm just going to interject because Medios stood me up for the movie we were supposed to go to yesterday. We were going to see Dune. I even bought his ticket
he
for him.
You buy your ticket?
I bought his ticket for him. This is eternal proof.
Wait, so you were at the theater?
Yeah.
And he just didn't come?
Dude, I lost track of
days. That's cold, dude.
It was my bad. It was my bad.
That's actually messed up. It would be different if it was like, it's still not great, but if like day of, you're like, sorry, bro, something came up, I can't make it.
Dude,
my man was waiting at the theater.
What's really funny?
He buttered up your popcorn for you.
Bro.
He was there.
We scheduled this like a month ago. I didn't write it in my calendar.
It was like 3 days ago. It was really funny. It was so classic gamer because I felt like it was going to happen too. So earlier in the day, I went to lunch.
You open up Twitch, he's streaming.
I know. I went to lunch with Saint and Hotshot, and I was thinking like, maybe I should message Medios and be like, I'll meet you outside the theater or something, because I was like, remind him.
Yeah.
Because I had a feeling, but I was like, I don't need to message him.
I'm an adult.
That's exactly. That's like too much spam, You don't need to spam people. And then when I get there, I'm like, I'm outside. You want to just meet outside the theater? Because Taco, the gin streamer, was also going to join us. And so I was like, we'll just all meet there. And Medios was like, I might still be at home. And I was like, don't worry. They put like 30 minutes of ads in front of all the movies now. Plenty of time. And he was like, let me look it up. It's too far.
It was far.
How far was it?
I don't know. I would have got there like an hour later.
Was it super far?
Shit. An hour?
I mean, it wasn't an hour away, but like from the time that like the Uber would have taken.
That's cooked.
It was really.
You're gonna have to make it up to him.
Yeah.
It's gonna have to be a nice romantic gesture, You're gonna have to be outside his window playing guitar or something.
Yeah, I'm planning it. Don't worry.
Otherwise, next season's coming up. Look what happened to Mark. That's all I'm saying.
Oh man, did Mark not go to a movie?
Dude. That's actually why he's not on the dive. He missed a movie with Kobe one time. And all Kobe's right. Boom!
So that's my new answer. Super Week was less super than Superman, but more super than the Super Carrie Jungler.
Yeah. Did you still watch the movie?
It was really good. Yeah, I mean, so Taco was there also.
Okay, that's good.
So I still went,
that's good.
Yeah. I wasn't all alone.
You didn't get double
crying
set
to
up.
Myself with two empty seats, but we did have one empty seat right in between us.
Yeah.
You guys left the empty one in between you?
No.
That's really funny. That movie is so good, by the way. Did you see it in a nice theater? Like a big theater?
Oh, yeah, it was IMAX.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got so the nice ticket for him and everything.
BDS.
We shouldn't schedule it months ahead of time next time.
Months.
3 days.
Ahead of time. On some other news for things that are scheduled.
Some less important news.
Some less important news than missing the movie. We'll see. Maybe he won't show up for this either. But you're supposed to do a TriCast with us for playoffs. So we have that coming up.
Oh, was that this week?
We should have scheduled that like right now. Oh wait, we're
scheduling
him
right
now.
There
so.
You go. That's you've never cast an actual game before, have you?
I did a guest cast.
You did
once.
A guest cast? Okay, mm-hmm. I couldn't remember if you had done that. But you're gonna be doing a TriCast with us. It's the return of the dive cast. Mark may be dead, but Medios is here, and we'll see if he shows up. Otherwise,
we're gonna
leave an empty space We'll stand awkwardly far apart, and we'll just have a weird space in the middle.
We'll still ask him questions, and it'll just be dead air.
Do we have Taco on standby to fill in case something happens?
Like, so Medios, what do you think about the draft? He's not here.
I'm pretty sure he would have said something super insightful and funny, but
we don't know. So we just won't
leave it to the imagination.
But that should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. We have that coming up this weekend. Obviously, it's going to be playoffs, and If you guys watched LCS at all this weekend, I sincerely hope you know that it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday for playoffs, because that graphic had to be up there 300 times at least.
And I said it a bunch of times, even when the graphic wasn't up there.
Yep.
Just because.
So we're hammering it home, but now it's getting hammered home even more here on the Dive. It's going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We have playoff matches all 4 days. But before we get to that, we can talk maybe a little bit about Smolder. It's been a big topic in the community. This thing is an absolute pentakill machine. I saw some stats. It was posted on the Lolly Sports Stats website. The LCS stats guy, Liam, he looked it up. And it was basically like how fast champions had gotten to 24 pentakills, because Smolder hit 24. I think it's actually almost at like 30 or something now, though. But it hit 24 pentakills.
In pro play?
Yeah. It hit 24 pentakills in pro play. I think it was before this weekend, and I think it got a bunch more this weekend because it's getting played everywhere. But someone asked, how many games did it take to get to that? For Smolder, it was about 500.
Games.
It was 500 games. 24. Yeah. It was actually 22 games because you usually get more than one.
Yeah.
And then by comparison, Zeri, who most people are like, Zeri is the most egregious pentakill, like fraud pentakiller.
Yeah.
It was over 1,500 games. So it was three times as fast as Zeri got to that benchmark. There was another champion in there, but I can't actually remember. It might have been Jinx or something. Might have
Kai'Sa
had like,
got
no, it was
a lot.
Kai'Sa. Kai'Sa had a slightly better rate actually than Zeri, which surprised me a little bit. But it was like, say, I don't know, 13, 14. But basically, the champion is getting pentakills three times as fast as any other champion has before. And that I think is prompting like a lot of discussion about the champion, like, is it too strong, you know, the 225 stack stuff, should it work that way? Obviously the pentakills don't directly equate to strength because it's just built into the kit. Like,
dude, I hate that part. I honestly hate that part.
You always get the kill if the dot is on.
It's
like,
it doesn't
even seem, it seems to be like, even if they're at 20% and it's above the execute range and you hit them for 2000, Smolder still seems to get the kill. Like, it just, like, if the dot is on, Smolder gets the kill credit. So
there was one game this weekend, actually, where APA's Ziggs ult, I want to say, took a kill from Smolder burn.
Was the dot on?
Yeah.
Okay. I felt like I hadn't seen that because it seems
that's
like
a victory.
That is
one for the little guy.
Dude, okay.
Yeah.
So
do they need to
reclassify
the pentas? Maybe call it a Smolder kill or something, you know?
They should, because here's the thing. Like for me,
Smolder kill.
For me in League, I feel like the stats should be reflecting of like how well you're playing, right?
Yeah.
And having a champion that literally just gets every single kill, when, like, it's so dumb. Like, you're not, it makes it feel. It honestly might be a perception thing. It might make him seem like he's stronger than he is just because he is always getting pentas, even if his damage isn't like that crazy. He's just last hitting everyone.
Mm-hmm. So every AD carry out there who's either on a struggling team or just struggling themselves, make your coach pick you Smolder so you can have better job prospects for transferring teams.
Exactly.
It's going to inflate your stats. You're going to have way more kills.
Put
gonna
on
look
the resume.
Way better. Exactly. Put that sucker on the resume.
I would expect him to get permaban, though, in playoffs. I would be surprised if teams were letting him go through.
Also, we were playing this last weekend, even without the hotfix nerf, which was the cooldown reduction
even more open.
On the ultimate. So we will at least be getting that hotfix in. I know that they already stated, the bounce team already stated that Smolder is getting nerfs for next patch too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Sometimes, like, the leak of what the actual patch notes is kind of like slow little drip over this week. So I don't know if the Smolder ones are actually released yet, but they know, and Smolder's on the list for next patch. But we're not changing patches anymore. We're on this patch for all of playoffs, so this will be the state of the dragon. I'm pretty sure we're going to update to have the hotfix in, though.
Yeah, I think that will. The only reason the hotfix wasn't in this weekend was it came out like...
It literally came out the day before, and so
they weren't sure.
Everyone felt like
bugs.
It was unfair to the teams to change it up on them the day before playoffs and say, oh, actually, we're going to, you know, change your draft priority.
Plus there's worries about it. Is it stable or not? Because it hadn't actually, like, really come out. So you're not certain with that. I'm trying to see if I can actually find the changes that are going to be coming. Doesn't look like it's actually posted. At least I can find a post that says they're going to address Smolder.
The details come out slowly.
Yeah.
You got to wait. Follow a spider.
I was hoping that there might have been some
spider. Whatever that guy's name is. Yeah.
But either way, it is probably going to be getting a nerf. I will say, I think Smolder's really fun to play. I don't think it's fun to watch, which is disappointing.
OP champs are pretty fun to play.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But I enjoy scaling champions, right? Like, I enjoy playing, like, anything where number go up, I just kind of enjoy it. Like, I like playing like Game Champions. I like getting stacks on Assist. I like getting stacks on Smolder. I like getting stacks on Acel. I like playing Kale. I like playing those kind of champs. I think it is a fun play style to be like, if I survive and do well, I could be really strong later. But I don't like playing against the champion, and I don't particularly like watching it. I think that is the downside, especially of how the execute works, is I think this happened with Zeri as well. And it's happened with a lot of these champions where they are really, really prevalent and pick up a lot of these kills, is that even when they have a really cool moment and it is impressive, people kind of discredit it or don't feel like it's that cool because there's so many other ones that kind of, you know, take away from it. Like, it stops feeling special. And I do think that's one of the things that's kind of happening with Smolder right now. And to me, at least for pro, the most egregious thing for pro is just that the champion has too much wave clear, because it's like, if you want to play this hyperscaling champion, you should be able to punish it by stacking waves and diving it, or by, you know, like freezing the wave on it. But he just kind of WQRs the wave and it gets blasted, right? And at least for pro play, I think that has definitely been a major problem, is that Smolder can kind of bail himself out of a lot of these situations. You don't even need jungle help, because if the wave is going to crash, you're in trouble. You ult it. The wave is frozen on you. You ult it. You know, there's like all these ways to kind of break the freeze and stop these spots where I feel like it could spiral out of control for him, because he does have a really trash early game, but it's just harder to actually punish because of how good his wave clear is, right?
Yeah, I mean, his E is also, like, really safe. It feels like a Xayah ult. Like, obviously, you're not going untargetable, but just the speed at which you can get out, like, trying to gank a Smolder feels really impossible. So, I don't know. I'm definitely the resident Smolder hater. Like, I really dislike this champ.
You're the one.
The only one. I'm the only
you're
one.
So you're so unique. Right? You're so unique, dude.
I mean, parts of him are interesting and stuff, but I just think, like, in his current form, like, he's just way too strong and hard to punish for how much payoff you get. It, like, it'd be one thing if this is, like, you know, a level 16 Kassadin, right? Because when I think of, like, a hyperscaling, you think of, like, Kassadin and Kale, right? Yeah. And they are super punishable, and they take much longer to get online.
And Kale's late game is way worse.
Yeah, and then you have this guy who's, like, just, like, a late game champ who's just impossible to punish, and then he gets Pentas every game, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the...
I think he's cheating.
The early speed at which you, like, get to your scaling point has always been my big complaint with it. You know, it doesn't feel like the weak phase is super long. Also, the stated goal for the champion was that it's a very easy to pick up champion and, like, easy to play. They wanted to make it so it's more like new player friendly.
Yeah.
I feel like if you ever have one of those types of champions be OP or super strong, or even just super strong, then it feels even worse, because when you get outplayed, you're like, well, what should I have done? You know, it's not like, oh, this guy was pulled off a crazy combo. That was really sick of him. You know, how he killed me. Dang.
I don't think anyone's ever thought that, by the way, about any champion.
Really?
I feel like everyone's always salty when they die. You know what I mean? Like Zed ults you, Shadow dodges your spell and then hits you with the double shuriken and you die from full. You're never like, damn, bro. Yeah. That was nice, bro. That was so sick, bro. Like, damn. You really got me there. All right, I'll give it to you. You're a better player in this one. Like, I've played a lot of games of League of Legends. Never once has someone been like, you got me, bro. Good one.
I mean, that's a league player mentality. Right. The reaction is much more like, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm a god. How could I fall?
Me? You're telling me that I died? Yeah. This has to be broken.
And if it wasn't like that guy did well, my opponent did well, it's more like, also my teammates. My teammates were sucking ass.
My Lulu didn't polymorph the Zed. What was he doing?
Yeah.
Where's the exhaust?
Yeah, but I mean, I hear you. It's he's a caster style champion, and late game, like, the thing that's so frustrating about him, I mean, the rapid fire Q interaction is another thing that makes him really, really safe to apply these stacks. It's point and click. It's not like you can dodge it like an Ezreal Q. He's hitting you.
There is still, you know, as much as we're memeing, like, there is still definitely a spectrum of champions where it's like, when people don't complain about Lee Sin that much, because there are a lot of ways to mess it up, you know? And so, you know, when you get outplayed like Lee Sin, and Lee Sin also hasn't been, like, super OP for a long time, but go look at the top of any region ladder. The top junglers almost always one of their main champs is Lee Sin.
Yeah.
Right? It's
I mean, like, skills with skill like
it's
crazy.
A very popular champion. It doesn't – I mean, sometimes it has felt a little unfair, but – way less than the majority of, you know, champions that have been.
I remember, I feel like it was back in the, well, we have Brutalizer, I guess, again now, but like back in the old Brutalizer days and stuff, I found Lee Sin pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I mean,
because he's just in your jungle at like level 3, falling around everywhere. He's resourceless. He's always full health. You know, it's just like.
And also today, it's a little bit easier than it has been. Like they made the insect way easier to pull off, and so sometimes now there can be BS moments where, you know, he just does a kick combo on you and you don't get to move, and they guaranteed Q2 and you're like, ah, that's BS. But
it's way less,
but it's
sure.
It still is like a gradient.
I agree completely. It's also interesting, I had heard from some people who were like involved in the LPL that the LPL pros now believe that Smolder is like trash and unplayable. And I found that really, really interesting. I couldn't actually get the person who I was talking to didn't have the reason, like, because the pros didn't give them a reason. They were just like, it's bad now. You just play Kai'Sa into it and like,
oh man. But LPL Kai'Sa is so different from anywhere else Kai'Sa. Yeah, I mean, like, they're insane. Yeah. So
and when I heard this, I was like, okay, so now I'm gonna dig into the I was trying to talk about this reason, and I was asking some different pros that I know, like, oh, how do you feel about this matchup? And they were all like, I like playing into Kai'Sa. And I was like, okay, well, maybe the data shows me that this is a bad matchup in the LPL. It didn't show that either, so I was kind of like, well, I don't really know.
Turns out that LPL pros is like Gala.
It might just be that they heard like,
dude, this always happens though. Anytime there's an OP scaling champ in a role, the person who plays that role will always tell you, no, it's not that good, man. Like AD carries, if you ask almost every pro AD carry, they're probably like, no, Smolder's not that good. Like, I would rather play into him. Like, give him Smolder. I'll beat him in lane. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm gonna totally crush this guy. Then like, you get into game, they're up 5 CS and like 0 plates. Then Smolder's Elder Dragoning everybody. It's like, yep, we countered him, boys.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting, especially going. Well, I guess there's probably gonna be some more changes and stuff. But like, going into playoffs, since that's when people kind of prove it, so to speak, right? Where it's like, if in LPL, if people are doing really poorly on Smolder in playoffs, that would be really interesting to actually see, right? If they have a real answer for it, because that's when people are going to be picking whatever they think is the most OP stuff, right? For sure. Either way, some more balance changes coming for it. Hopefully they'll be able to solve people's frustrations with it. We also have All Pro we've got to talk about, as the All Pro voting is due tomorrow by the end of the day. So I haven't done all my All Pro voting yet. Well, I haven't done any of it yet. I've been thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But I have come to the realization that some of these roles are going to be really, really hard to vote for. I also watched Pros with Zven. That was really, really good. It was Zven, Cortege, Contracts, and Jensen. So if you guys haven't watched that, you should check that one out. Zven hosted that, did a good job. It was fun. But they also talked about All Pro as well. And like, they were struggling on who they should even vote for. So I mean, bot and support, I think I want to kind of start talking about those.
You want to start with the hardest first.
That is hard.
Because it is super hard, right? And it's like, you know, even on Pros, it was funny because I was like, oh, well, they'll surely have a stronger opinion. And mostly it was like, Jensen's like, well, maybe Berserker. And they're like, well, I don't know about that. He hasn't been doing that well on stage. But he's like, well, if I can't vote for Berserker, I don't know who I'm supposed to vote for. Like, they basically were just struggling with it. And I do think it's really, really hard because I don't think we had a single bot lane that really stood out from the rest over the course of the whole season. I don't think there's a single one.
And, well, I would say you could maybe be a bit more detailed and say there were moments where bot lanes did.
Yeah.
But then they would also have some terrible games.
Really inconsistent.
And so, you know, if you put that name down, then someone's
like,
going to come to you.
Look at this game. Like,
yeah, exactly. Someone's going to show you, do you remember? You know, someone's going to show you Tomo's stats. And Tomo actually has really good stats. And then they're going to show you the Smolder game where B-Voy just culls him to death.
And he
uses flash and does like 3 damage. And you're just like, whoa, that guy is going nowhere near all pro. And that, so like, you can construct arguments for and against. Yep. Every bottom lane? Every bottom lane?
I feel like there is pretty much a guarantee that Berserker is going to get all pro. And I think it's because people will really struggle with the bot lane votes. And they'll be like, Berserker should be in there, right? Like, Berserker's really good. He's got to be in there.
Yeah.
The Berserker's comfort. Had some horrible, horrible games. One thing, including too, even just this weekend, like, he has had so many int moments and so few, like, standout incredible moments. Is he one of the three best ADC players in the league? Yeah, I would say so for sure. Was he one of the three best performing ADCs on the games in spring? That's a much harder argument to make. But I do think that when things get difficult with voting, people just kind of default to, this big name player isn't going to get me flamed if I vote for him, which I do think is tough.
Yeah, I mean, also because a lot of people don't look at All Pro and they don't think about, is this All Pro for the games that you played on stage? Or is it for the players that are good, right? Yeah. Because you still are like, oh man, it's like you have so much built up history of this player is a good player, so I know them to be good, and that's why you're going to default to someone like that when there's so much indecision and there's so much. I mean,
it was the same thing when Core had some really bad years, but he kept making All Pro. I just felt like that was like kind of like hangover from like, oh, like Core's good, like he should be in there, right?
Yeah, I think one thing that makes it hard for me as well is, you know, we have a lot of rookies in bot lane this year. It's like where I think we talked about earlier that like almost no LCS team kept the same bot lane. Also, the bot lane picks, I think, makes it a little bit hard to have like a really good read on it because, you know, there was like the double support thing going on. There was a lot of Senna being played. There's like Smolder, Zeri, like scaling type champs. So. Yeah. I think compared to the other roles, they don't have quite as much agency this split. So, yeah. I think it has been harder to stand out. Ole is actually a player to me that has put on like
some really good
performances. Like his Bard games are really crazy.
Had some really good Nautilus games as well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, even Thresh. Like I think Ole has looked really good even on a struggling team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because I do think there wasn't like one super consistent dominant bot lane, you could craft an argument for almost any player, right? Like there's things you can take away from pretty much everyone. I also think, you know, you touching on the fact that there was these rookie bot lanes and young bot lanes, that I think is a big part of it, because generally it's like bot lane is such a core component of the top team success. A lot of our best teams, like when you look at the top two teams, you look at FlyQuest, you look at 100 Thieves, they didn't have dominant bot lanes, right? The bot lanes were more stable and they team fight pretty well, but it was much more about top lane for both our top two teams, right? Like we just didn't really have that. So I think that makes it more difficult as well. A lot of times in All Pro, you see a lot of the top teams are stacking up all these top players. I hope that people are really going to think hard about this and that we are going to have kind of like a diverse spread of people on All Pro, because I don't think that this should just be like, all right, well, who are the top three? Those are the All Pros. You know, it shouldn't just be people plugging and playing like FlyQuest, 100 Thieves and whatnot for everything, because the league was incredibly close. Like even when you look at the standings, it's a couple games between, you know, like third and like seventh. So I do think even some of the teams that are down there are deserving of consideration. I think Bvoy actually deserves some consideration, absolutely, for All Pro. I feel like, especially on when you talk about people that are on a worse team, like you talk about Ole, I think Bvoy played really solid. Like he, I think, positions well. I think he was pretty consistent. I think especially when you think back to early on in the split, when I'm trying to take the whole split into consideration, when he first came in, I thought he had some really monster Varus games. Like he was playing the on-hit Varus stuff and doing really, really well. I feel like he's usually in the right place at the right time. Like he doesn't feel like he's getting caught out randomly. He's like moving around the map well. I feel like he was maybe the best ADC this split.
I know, like, they don't usually want us to like spoil our All Pro votes and stuff.
We can spoil our All Pro votes.
He's also say he's on my All Pro.
Spoil away. I don't think it matters. Which one,
but he is on mine. Because I did mine.
It's probably the AD carry one.
Damn it! Spoil, no.
Where did you put him?
Well, the AD carries also played a lot of Senna, so you know I might have put him in support.
True.
Yeah, I don't know, dude.
Put Bvoy for both, actually.
I feel like it would be easier if there were more games. It's just so hard to compare players when they're playing such different roles, you know. It's like you're comparing somebody's Smolder with somebody else's Kalista, where like, you know, one of them's this scaling try not to lose the game champ, the other one's like this crazy lane bully. It's
or
so
also like you're also comparing them with a team who their jungler always splits the map for bottom versus a jungler who's always ganking for their like psychopath top laner that's picking some super volatile matchup every time. And you're like, well, they didn't do a lot in the early game because that's what they were supposed to do. And then they backed off these two waves at the perfect timing. And you're like, holy, they're so good. They didn't die there. No, no one says that. No one's like, oh, my God, these guys are geniuses. They predicted this, or, you know, they avoided the mid lane and jungle roam on bottom lane on red side and they didn't die.
Yeah.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
And with so many Senna games, laning stats are just completely useless, right? Because it's mm-hmm. like – the way that the stats track, it compares Senna who's not farming to the AD who's farming and stuff. So you can't look at like CSD. You can't look at like
things like, oh my god,
like
he's down 100 farm.
Yeah, exactly. Like a lot of that stuff kind of goes out the window. So it is very, very difficult because it's not apples to apples. So I think by far, bot lane is the most difficult role. I think FBI also had a pretty good split. I think that the last week is going to weigh heavy on a lot of people's minds because energy were horrible this mm-hmm. last week. And
they were super weak.
Got them. You're not wrong. They went 0-4, and recency bias plays a lot on people's minds for voting. So, you know, maybe that'll kind of hurt his case. But that's another player I feel like definitely deserves some consideration.
Man, speaking of recency bias and this last weekend's games, I was so locked in on – man, I'm for sure putting Quid. I'm for sure putting Quid first on my MVP, on my mid lane role. And then JoJo has to save Cloud9 like 7 times in the same game. And I'm like, oh!
Oh, man.
It made it so much harder. I'm like, dude, that Cloud9 would be so screwed without JoJo. They would be so insanely screwed without JoJo.
Yeah, it's – I mean, I'm repping C9, you know. Uh-huh. I'm not going to flame him, but – they have been looking a bit shakier than people would expect. I mean, I remember coming into the split, everyone had him as like the clear favorite. It's like
they look like you
take this really good team.
Were.
Yeah, and you just add good players to a good team. Like, how could it not be good? But yeah, I don't know. Their most recent game, the 53-minute just complete ARAM late game
the
style
Nico one.
Yeah, it's like that's what bottom teams facing off against each other games look like, you know, like I'm sure there are reasons for it, but that just didn't feel like either team was playing particularly well, and I think they would say that too, right?
Yeah.
So not what we're hoping for heading into playoffs. Yeah. But you know, I'm not worried. They're gonna get it together. It's fine.
Totally not worried. It's fine. It's totally fine. It's for sure fine. It's fine.
But so I feel like, you know, if we're moving to the mid lane, like mid lane is a lot easier, at least lock it. I feel like Quid and JoJo are locked.
I feel like the
whether top, you put them one or two,
top two, I think for all the top side is really, really easy. I think, you know, Quid, JoJo are going to be number one, number two for jungle. Again, whoever you put it, which way doesn't matter, but River inspired. And I think for top lane, almost everyone is probably going to have like Bwipo and Impact, I would say.
That
would
not be, Sniper?
I think Sniper, well, maybe Sniper because he had such a good weekend should be top two. But I think those are the top three. I think like for sure people are going to do that. I don't know if there's anyone else that people could really make a strong argument for. I know some people have talked about Castle. Like Castle had some really good laning phases and stuff. And people are like, well.
Also, he beat me in solo queue. I tried to 1v1 him, and he actually juked me and styled on me. And I was like, damn.
All right, Castle, there. You're
Castle,
in the all pro. If he could beat me.
First all pro. That was a
MVP.
Good one. Nobody else beat me in a duel this season. So
there you go.
He's the best. No.
But I think it's probably going to be those three. And maybe Sniper should be moving further up the list, right? I mean, he had a monster last weekend. He got, I think, 7 solo kills this last weekend, which is really insane.
That's an absurd stat.
It is an absolutely absurd stat. The most in history was actually from Darshan, who had 10 in a week. I don't know how many games were played in
that
week.
What happened in that week?
I don't know how many games were played that week.
He's playing against some inters.
Darshan saw it, and he tweeted, must have been Nintendude X, Jungle Div. But, I mean, Darshan was like the original godlike split pusher, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
He was like solo killing Nexus.
He had a monster strong game, and like he sent 2 or 3, and you kill them all a couple times or something.
Yeah, he was like Jax, Fiora.
I have more spoilers. I have Sniper in my top two for top laners.
Yeah. And I mean, to be fair, I think, you know, with that final weekend, maybe he should be. I just have to look back and think through some of the older games as well, because I feel like he had some kind of clunkers
earlier
in the split too. He had recency bias is gonna be a hell of a drug for General Sniper, because it's like, man, if you're looking just at that last weekend, he's the best in the split. Like, maybe he should be in there for MVP, right? Like, he's solo killing everybody. He's doing everything. But, like, I don't think that for the over the course of the whole split, he is deserving of that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, definitely guaranteed he's going to be in my top three.
Who's your third then, now?
I think he's in my top three for sure. Okay. But
so you're just doing order now.
Yeah, yeah. He's in my top three. I just have to figure out where he should go in there. But, I mean, Impact was, I just felt like, really solid the whole split,
mm-hmm.
kind of like as always. I thought he played really well. And again, his team wasn't doing so hot, but I thought he was pretty damn steady almost the entire split. And mm-hmm. he did have some games where I was like, wow, you are actually kind of 1v9ing this game, but some things went very unfortunate. Like the APA game where everyone talks about APA TPing like in front of the Azir and dying and whatnot. That was the Monster Jax game, I believe, from Impact, where he was like, it felt like he was just going to 1v9, but the weights were too heavy in that one. So, like, there are some crazy performances there.
I'm just picturing, did you see the pros that Impact was on? It was, I think JoJo and Inspired were the two on with him.
Mm-hmm.
And they both of them are flaming the TL carries. And then they turn to Impact and they ask Impact about it. And he goes like this.
I mean, what can you say,
like,
right?
You can't say anything. No, no. He just takes a sip. I'm like, oh my god, I feel so bad for him.
Well, that was like, it was really funny on this on the most recent pros with Sven. I think Sven was kind of like flaming Jan or something, and then Enzo was like, what, you think you're better than Jan? He's like, yeah. You know, like, so
post the job application.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that's one of the things that the players love doing on that show, especially this most recent episode. Everyone's just like razzing each other, like, oh, like, you guys aren't doing very well early game. And then Contract's along, and he's like, well, I had a pretty good early game in this weekend, whatever. And like, oh, so it's your teammates' fault. Like, your teammates are, you know, like, everyone's just trying to, like, dig in on him a little bit. It's pretty funny.
It's good stuff. Good banter.
Yeah. So I guess like, who do you guys think then, if are you kind of agreed with what we were talking about for top three for top lane and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I would. Honestly, just based on the gameplay we've seen, I would put Sniper at one or two, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I would have to go back and look at Whippo's games more closely, because
Whippo was monstering in the early season. I feel like they kind of almost had the inverse split, where Whippo went cooled down a little bit towards the end, and Sniper, I think, was a lot.
Yeah, because I think for Sniper, like, you know, obviously his debut match with Riven wasn't really what he was hoping for, and because I was definitely someone that was, like, trying to, you know, look at him as objectively as possible, like, put aside all the hype from, like, you know, him being, like, the really young challenger and whatnot, and just look at how his game started. And so in the beginning, I was, you know, not totally sold. I was saying, you know, I need to see more. I'm not what I'm seeing isn't enough yet. But he's had some insane games. Like, his laning phase, almost every game, he's just, like, solo killing really experienced players in all kinds of matchups. And just the way he plays team fights is super impressive to me.
So
he's
aggressive.
Not just, I mean, he's very aggressive. He makes a ton of space. He's someone that if you're playing a carry against him, you are extremely cognizant of what he's doing the whole time, or he's just gonna clean you up. I remember talked about it before, but like, he had an Aatrox game where he was just pressuring the flank so well that he was like just basically paralyzing the enemy team's backline, because like they couldn't go on him, they couldn't ignore him.
That's one of my favorite skills. I love playing melee champions and just trying to use, like, holding an ability and using your threat to not tank damage, but not let your opponent carries do damage to anyone on your team, including yourself.
Yeah.
And that is super, super difficult spacing to be able to do. But he's definitely done it well in a lot of scenarios. My favorite thing about Sniper, though, is the stuff that their coaches say about him and how much room he has to improve in just knowledge about the game, and how, like, slow he is to learn stuff when they're trying to teach him stuff. They're like, oh my god, this kid, he's insane mechanics. They're like, this guy is so good. And then they'll go and they'll, like, explain something about a matchup or explain something about some map move or something, and they're just talking about, yeah, and he has this, he'll just stare at you for for like 15 seconds or something, and then go, okay, yeah, I understand. And you're not really sure. You know? Is it in there? Is it not? And then he goes on stage and he just turbos on people and just solo killing people all over the place. Such an exciting player. I just, yeah, the energy he has, he's always smiling and like dancing on people.
His reactions on the cameras. Yeah.
I feel like if he is this.
His reactions are so funny.
He's this good already, and they have room to teach him a bunch of stuff. I feel like this is definitely going to be a very fun LCS career.
He's for sure super deserving of all pro. Who do you guys think for third jungle? Because that I think is where jungle gets really, really hard. Inspired River, I think.
River
almost
Inspired.
I'm trying
almost
to remember.
Everyone, if not everyone, should have them in their top two, right? Because like, I think those guys are MVP candidates as
well. Yeah, I think mine that I put, I was bouncing between.
I think Umtiti deserves consideration. I thought he was pretty solid.
I was bouncing between three. It was Blabber, Contracts, and Umtiti. And I kept juggling from game to game that I was thinking about. Contracts obviously has had a whole bunch of Baron steals, and Energy's had even rougher than Cloud9 had it.
Last week, obviously, again, so it was going to weigh heavy on people's mind.
That. It was definitely between those three for me bouncing around. I can't remember which one I left it on because I kept changing.
Blabber, I feel like, as much as people are kind of negative on Cloud9 right now, he still, I think, had a solid split. He definitely didn't have a Blabber split, but like I still think he was solid. I don't know. It's tough because I do feel like Umtiti was pretty solid for TL as well. I can't remember like a lot of like really bad games from Umtiti or anything. I think Blabber maybe had some more funny moments that are going to.
I mean, Umtiti had some funny moments too when he leveled two, flash over the back of Dragon Pit when he's Xin Zhao and just like runs him out of his own jungle and then gets solo killed because I think it was Boogie stayed around and killed him at Raptors or something. Like that was really funny. I mean, there were like I think it was a Rel game where he had some oopsies, but again
all three of those guys
had some games where we're going back and like, whoa, that is a little
I think I would give it to Blabber, and I think, you know, part of that might be what you're talking about before with like, you know, you take into account how good they are as a player outside of just this split,
because
Blabber's always had this really weird phenomenon with him where, like, when he does well, it's just, you know, it's pretty dominating. Like, he's just really solid, and he just wins the game. But when he makes mistakes, he makes some of, like, the most bizarre mistakes you've ever seen. Like, there was the Maokai tower dive that went really poorly. It wasn't this split, but I remember there was one where he, like, just got 100-0'd by a Sion passive. Or just,
oh yeah, like he stayed there.
Yeah, there's like the crab situation. So like the mistakes he makes are, you know, they're obvious mistakes, and people will look at it and be like, you know, oh, like how could someone do that? It's such a crazy thing to do. But you know, I feel like in a way it kind of undermines all the really good stuff he does that's people are quieter about. So I mean, I obviously think he's a really good player. So yeah. I would put him top three.
I think one thing in the past that he's done, he actually didn't even do it that much this split, and it turns into like a whole team thing, is they'll over chase in some situations, or they'll like turn off of an objective and really tunnel vision on charging forward, and then like they'll charge forward into a bunch of AoE or something that you would think that they would see coming, and just because we also know a lot about how he shot calls, and you know, the team is like gotta follow type of thing. Some of those things get attributed to him, where I feel like if Cloud9 are ever like over chasing or you know, diving in like that, then those are some of the things that backfire. But yeah, he's such a good jungler.
They're also just don't think it was really kind of Blabber meta this split. When I'm looking at the most played champions in jungle for LCS, okay, it was Vi and then Sejuani, Rel, Ivern. That's the top four picks in jungle in this split, and those are not really Blabber champs.
Milky Way is playing Kindred and Graves, and Blabber was getting some
Way
Kindred
is
in there.
Legit just the best player in the world right now, right? So just be him. Obviously, you can play some other stuff, but yeah, it felt like in general, and also especially in the earlier and during a lot of the struggles for Cloud9, I felt like it's like Blabber's on Rel duty or he's on whatever, and that's part of the adjustment that they were obviously making post-break. But I do think that kind of contributes to it as well. Contracts also, you know, he had some great moments. Like, you know, he had these really memorable games where he's stealing Baron and stuff. But then they also had things this weekend, like the Lilia game where he gets really far ahead and then they reinvade on blue, but they reinvade without Palafox. So it's like it's partially maybe both their fault. If he's saying they should invade and Palafox maybe need to come earlier or whatever, but they end up in a 2v4 and just throw away the big advantage that they actually got in jungle in the early game. Then again, it feels like they're building towards this fight at second set of grubs, where the other team had already taken the first three, and he hadn't base prior. He had like 1500 gold in pocket. Doke had 1500 gold in pocket, and then they like force fight there, lose anyway, and don't get anything elsewhere. It's like these are things that you can attribute to a number of different things. You never know who's making the actual call, but he's obviously had some struggles I think recently as well. So it's easy to kind of like nitpick and poke away at some of the different ones. What do you guys think about mid lane? Do you guys think it's like a Jensen angle for third, or there should be someone else in there? Because it does feel like Quid and JoJo, I think, for sure. Because, again, I think they're MVP candidates.
I mean, I think Jensen for sure has to be top three.
Yeah.
And Quid and JoJo are also playing really well. So I think I would probably put Jensen, Quid, JoJo.
Oh, really?
One, so two, three, if I was doing that.
So you don't think that Quid or JoJo would be MVP candidates then?
Personally, no. I think that, you know, all three of them are really good. I think that, to me, Jensen has had, like, just the most solid gameplay overall. He's had just really insane Orianna games. And maybe it's just, like, he feels good playing with his new team. But yeah, he really looks like he's just having a great split. And as far as Quid and JoJo, I think that, you know, they've had a lot of good games. But also, like, JoJo is for sure not in his best form in a lot of the games. Like, most of C9's wins were when he was on Azir, and you know, he was hard carrying those games. He had a really good Nico game, but some of his Akali games weren't that great. He was making some like pretty big mistakes that he wouldn't normally make. So you know, I think he still could be the best mid laner, but from what we saw so far this split, I don't think I'd put him there.
I mean, the only two Akali games they lost were against Talia Vi, which I feel like is so hard for you to actually play all the team fights. The most recent one also had Ziggs in there, and it's like every team fight, even in Shroud, he gets 100-0'd by Vi ult, Seismic Shiv combo, Ziggs ult, all this stuff gets thrown on top. Those are the two Akali games that he lost. I feel like even in some of their losses, he was one of the guys that was like making things kind of happen, so to speak. There was another Nico game earlier in the split and a loss to FlyQuest that I thought he was kind of putting on some heroics as well. I also know that by far he was the best laner in the league, like by far. Not even just for mid lane. I thought he was the best laner of any lane in the league. Like even just when you're looking at laning stats and CSD and stuff, like he was pretty insane. There was, I know earlier on in the split, Pastry was telling me this, that there was like a stretch of games where it was like a really long stretch of games where he was at least 20 CS up every single game at 15, which was pretty crazy. But even just like season wide, Quid closed the gap a little bit because Quid had been laning pretty well. But JoJo was plus 12.6 CSD at 10 on average. Next highest was Quid at 5. And then it's like a huge drop off. Everyone else is basically even or negative, mostly from laning against him. Like, I feel like he is a really, really impressive laner. He draws a lot of pressure. He doesn't always get the most jungle help. He draws a lot of jungle attention. And I feel like he's always kind of like that X factor. Mm-hmm. I definitely don't think he was perfect by any means, but JoJo still really impressed me. Like, I thought he was by far the best player on Cloud9 this split. And while Cloud9 didn't even come close to meeting the expectations, I don't know. It just felt it felt weird to watch because it felt somewhat reminiscent to watching JoJo on worse teams, right? Like, it felt like watching JoJo last year, except he was surrounded by all-stars, but it still felt like in some of those games, it was like a JoJo 1v9 show or nothing.
Yeah, I mean, those are good points. Definitely his laning phase has been super good. It's hard because, you know, wherever you put these players, it's like they can't all be number one, right? You're ranking them against one another. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's valid to put him higher, but that's where I'm at right now.
It's also interesting always because we don't have the comms from Champ Select, but a lot of people are like, oh, why, you know, why did they pick Akali into Vitalia again? Because the second time they were like, oh, and they already lost this and you see it coming. And then you're like, well, if you knew that it was like JoJo was like, yo, give me Akali, then does that change your, like, oh, kind of writing it off into some of the situations?
Well, I'm not trying to fully write it off, but I hear what you mean. I think that it's like, yeah, it does change it a bit. And that's one of the hard things about League, right? Is that there's a lot of the skill of the game is like knowing where to be and what to do and all these things. It's not just like what your hands are doing, right? And so you could be on a team where one of the players is dictating the whole draft and is just really, really smart about it. So you're mm-hmm. always getting these comps that are going to make you look good. And one of the players is telling you exactly where to go and whatever and masterminding the team. And theoretically, that some of that is going to get attributed to other players, right? Mm-hmm. So that's the reality is we just don't know. And it's the same thing with mistakes. It's like if a jungler doesn't cover this bot dive that seems super obvious to us, well, did the bot laners tell him, nah, bro, we're good. We win this 2v2 every time. You don't need to be here. So he's like, okay, sweet. I'm bathing top. Like, whose fault is that? It's not the junglers, yeah, but we don't know that.
This fool did not cover bottom lane, and they just lost the game.
Yeah.
Terrible jungler.
I mean, that's the hard part about it, right? Like, we have to make some assumptions and whatnot. Sometimes we hear comms. Sometimes we hear interviews. You can learn a little bit more from that. But, yeah, some of it's just assumptions for sure.
And in some of these close ones, I ended up ordering it by just thinking, if I'm building my team, who do I want on my team first? Is how I ended up going.
I think JoJo is the first pick in the draft for the LCS. Every player is up for draft. I think JoJo gets picked first.
There you go. There's your break.
I think, but it's also, but I would also say, out of the ADCs, Berserker gets picked first, and he doesn't deserve to be number one at All Pro.
True.
So it's like, it doesn't always work, right? Because there's a difference, again, between who's the best player and who performed the best in those games mm-hmm. on split. This is another thing that they were talking about pretty heavily on pros, where it's the idea, especially like the pro votes are often different from, you know, from the people who are watching the games votes and their perceptions, because the pros are voting largely off of scrims, right? One of the things that they were talking about like heavily is, I mean, everyone on that pros episode basically thinks 100 Thieves is absolute trash. Like, they're total frauds. They wanted them in playoffs. They're horrible. They're like, you know, how did they win games? Who knows? They're the worst players ever is like basically the impression they're giving. And like, Core JJ said they called 100 Thieves scrims team bonding day because after you had a bad day, you would get to play 100 Thieves and you get to have your team bonding day because it's so easy. You know you're guaranteed to win every game. You all get to feel good and be friends again. So it's team bonding day.
Wow.
And it's like, everyone has been telling me this kind of stuff about 100 Thieves all year long. Like, they think that they are pissed. Like, they're horrible. They're frauds. They're just lucky. They're whatever. They keep winning on stage. But it's like the perception of someone who watched every game of LCS as like a co-streamer, or it was interesting because I was talking a lot about this with Sven when he was on LCS, because I was like, you are now in our shoes where Sven watched all the games, but he wasn't in any of the scrims, right? And so there can be this really kind of disjointed thing. And the other thing is a lot of the pros don't watch all, and some don't watch very many at all of the actual stage games, right? So it's mostly just based on their impressions of the players from scrims. I know Core, I think it was Core, one of them said, that also with the new drafting system, when they get here, they're not really even paying attention to the previous games, which is what you players used to always watch, because the draft has to be done offline. They have to be talking about the draft and focusing on that. So it's like they just don't really know what happened in a lot of the games. So their votes are going to be pretty different.
Yeah, it's always really interesting to look at the differences there. But honestly, I just am looking forward to seeing what the bottom lane turns out, because I think it's a chance for these young rookies to be up there. Usually we just have All Pro dominated by top teams in the league.
Where's Doublelift? Who do I vote for?
Yeah, established names. You know, are people still gonna write in Doublelift? They're like, you know, someone's still like sneaky, right? You know, like all these established names.
Place your bets.
Like,
does Berserker get first team All Pro anyway? Just because people don't know who to vote
for? I don't have him.
I would say probably.
I think he wins first team All Pro.
The thing
that's
is,
that's crazy.
And I think it's I'm not gonna vote for him.
He sandbagged himself by playing
win.
So much Lucian, right? Like, it was so self-inflicted. I feel like he's.
I have
not
heard
Lucian.
He's a Lucian fiend, though. He's begging for Lucian.
Yeah, he is. But it's like, dude, it's like.
So that's a character flaw of his own, then.
No, it's just the
fault
of the champion.
He keeps shooting himself in the foot.
Yeah, it's just too addicting. It's like, you know, eating a lot of candy.
He can't be blamed.
It's not good for you.
Playing Lucian is a disease.
I don't know. I'm not a doctor or anything, but all I'm saying is like every 80 carries like
he's got Lucianitis.
Give me Lucian. Give me Lucian.
Can it be cured? Is this terminal? So. No, it can't be cured.
I don't know. Maybe
is this more Lucian for playoffs?
I mean, he did get a Lucian win to his credit, but I
don't
know.
Did he? Or did JoJo Pyun get him a Lucian win?
Oh.
All I saw was Lucian blowing up an Nexus. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just look at the scoreboard.
that dash in after they had like won the game where he dashes onto the
flash. Oh, did he flash too?
Oh yeah.
Did
he
flash on him?
Yeah. He tried flashing the Kai'Sa W, but just flashed into it and
yeah. Instantly died.
Oopsies.
I heard that the C9 coaching staff was not pleased.
But
about that
imagine
one. Really, I thought they would have been thrilled. Like, yeah, let's go berserk.
But imagine if he flashed over the Kai'Sa W and won the duel. You'll be going, oh my god, the balls on that guy.
Mm-hmm. True.
But instead, we're going, oh my god, get that guy off my ult, bro.
Yeah, Berserker was not him this split, I will say that. But we'll see. Maybe he'll bounce back. Obviously, he's a pretty incredible player. We've kind of already touched on MVP a bit. I mean, do you want to talk about MVP a little bit? Because you were saying you didn't have JoJo and Quid up in your where you would consider top three. So I think that'll also be surprising
most people. They're my top three.
For MVP?
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
So,
I don't know.
So I'm kind of curious. Like,
I haven't given MVP a ton of thought yet. I think they're definitely solid candidates for it.
But you had Jensen first, right? So it's like generally you probably wouldn't be voting for people who are like, you know, second or third
right,
in the role,
right? Right. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I would probably give it to River right now if, you know, a pre-playoff MVP, just because, like we've talked about, he's on this team which no one really thought would do well, and he's just
so
making good plays all the time. So I think he would be my front runner for sure.
Yeah, I think it's going to be almost guaranteed one of JoJo, Quid, River, Inspired. I think it's going to be one of those four wins MVP, pretty much for sure. I'm not certain who is actually going to win, but yeah. Who is your front runner?
I'll give you – I have – All three of mine are within those four players.
Okay.
I'll give you that.
Okay, cool. it's going to be interesting. Obviously, that'll be coming out throughout playoffs and stuff as it normally does. But I'm really curious to see what some of the votes end up on, because bot lane especially, that could be almost anything.
Yeah. I
don't even know what.
I kind of took this one as an opportunity to – go more outside of the top of the league.
Yeah.
Recognize
some deserving players. B-Void's going to be in mine for sure. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, I'm like, I don't know, man. It's going to be hard. I've been struggling with thinking about bot lane for a couple days.
I would have to go and rewatch some of the games, I think, and just go through. Like, you know, I would have to rule people out. Right now, I don't have anyone in mind that's like a super crazy front runner, but I would want to like go back, you know, go through the games, just see who's, you know, trolling, and, you know, they're probably not my vote.
What's funny is I oftentimes find that my votes are in the places that they're different, they're really influenced by the games that I actually casted instead of watching. Because, like, the games that I watch, you know, as a spectator, they usually have, I feel like, less impact on what my vote
is.
You're
not as dialed
in. Yeah, if I casted a game where a player popped off really hard and I was, like, talking about it the whole time and, like, the steps that they took to get there and how it weaved into the strategy of the team and stuff, like, I remember, like, last year or something, or the year before that even, I was super big on Sunday and his split pushing.
And I cast all his horrible games, and you cast all his amazing games. I'm like, this guy is a fraud. You're like, he's the greatest.
Yeah, we argued about it, like, I think, like, four probably dive episodes in a row. And I was like, what? Where's the respect? Sunday's, split push, are you doing everything for this team? And you're like, what? I casted, like, the game I casted, he was into it, you know? And I was like, what? And we went through it and we figured out, like, yeah, it's because we casted the exact opposite games. All right,
he did do some good things and he did do some horrible things.
It was pretty funny.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on. We can talk about some playoffs as we have playoffs coming up again Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4 days LCS this week. The first match is going to be on Thursday. It is going to be 100 Thieves versus Cloud9. So we can start there. If you watch pros, every single person, every pro is betting against 100 Thieves. Everyone's like, nope, they're instantly going to lose.
We have also from the week before the JoJo interview, and he says, oh, I really want 100 Thieves in playoffs. And then they did another interview this weekend. I forget which day it was because it was 3 days. But I asked him about it, and he did the, like, super smiling, like, sarcastic, like, oh, no, I hope we don't get 100 Thieves. They're really scary, you know, type of answer. So I feel like Cloud9 are very happy.
Yeah. Jensen was like, we really wanted 100 Thieves. Like, they really wanted them to
I hope that 100 Thieves also just, like, smash him in playoffs just because it'll be so funny to look back at some of the interviews and trash talk. Mm-hmm. And, of course, for our first two, remember, because of our playoff bracket, these are – all the teams have two lives, basically, mm-hmm. in the top bracket of playoffs. So yep. We get to see an early preview of the high-ranking teams playing against each other, which is super cool. And it's also not elimination for them, so – you know, whichever team, you know, does end up losing then goes lower bracket anyway. And you get kind of the option to do lower bracket runs. But 100 Thieves versus Cloud9, I'm very much looking forward to.
Wait, so what advantage do you get in the format for being, like, first or second seed? Is it you just got to pick your opponent? Or
you're just getting – it's based – yeah, based on seed and stuff.
Yeah. I think they – because originally it was like, oh, you play the – like – if you're one, then you play the lower one. But I think they change it to you get to choose.
Yeah, because, I mean, in the past, right, we had playoffs. If there were six teams, it was like number one and number two would have a bye. Like, they just automatically advanced.
So now,
but now they're starting at the same point as three and four.
Yeah, you start on the top side, so you have the two lives, and then you choose which of the lower seeds you want for your for
the
your
first round. It's dynamic seeding.
You get to choose, I thought.
I'm not,
because I remember that they made a big deal about it. I mean, maybe it's not the case, but I remember they made a big deal about it. I forget which team it was, but the team that won the league then made a big deal because they're like, oh, our reward for winning the league was actually playing the stronger of the teams, because I forget who it was, but the fourth seed actually, you know, everybody thought was a more difficult opponent. Maybe because the third seed team, like, won a bunch of their games early in the season rather than later in the season. Sometimes that happens.
I'm not sure if it worked that way this season or not, because we do just have one versus four, two versus three. Yeah. So I'm not sure if it actually is that way or not. I mean, the reward is obviously you're supposed to, on paper, get easier teams to
get unseeded. I'm pretty sure that we would have kept it as you get to choose, but...
All right, well, we can double check. I don't know. This is, but... either way, I mean, the bigger reward is obviously getting top four. You get two lives, right? Yeah. And either way, you know, it is going to be, I think, I don't know. It is tough, right? Like, if they don't actually get to pick. Because that's something that we were also talking about.
It makes so much sense to be that the first would get to pick over the second. Like, that's your advantage over the second place team.
Yeah, I've always thought that, but there's a lot of formats where they don't do that. Where I've always, because I've played formats in tournaments I played in back in the day, where it gets really weird because you actually, like, wanted to lose sometimes to get a better matchup.
Yeah, that I think that's why you need to choose because I remember there was
there's a lot of formats where it doesn't work like
there
that.
There's, like, the 2015 LPL, like, Oscar night where teams are, like, if you ever have a match where both teams are trying to lose for seeding, I feel like something went wrong there, because that's just such a ridiculous thing to be happening.
Yeah, no, it can definitely get really weird. People were even talking about that with, like, oh, five versus six and stuff. Like, is it better to be fifth or sixth? You know, like, for example, you know, like if in that situation, like you want to bet a specific matchup, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it can definitely get really weird. So hopefully it is that way where you can actually just pick your seating. By the way, let's not talk about that too much because we're not even sure. But 100 Thieves versus Cloud9. Again, this is one where I know all the pros are obviously going to be predicting Cloud9, but I would say, like, absolutely, without a doubt, who played better on stage? It was 100 Thieves. Like, 100 Thieves, I think, was significantly better. I think Cloud9 had a tremendous amount of issues. The question is, like, is it going to be that team that shows up? And I think, you know, a big question from 100 Thieves' side is, with everyone prepping specifically for 100 Thieves, are they going to be able to do the same things that they did, right? You know, a lot of people I know are going to be looking at General Sniper and saying, okay, this guy had a monster final week, you know, 7 solo kills, he's playing hyper-aggressive, he's playing this sort of style. If teams are prepping specifically for that, you know, can that be shut down? Is he going to fall prey to jungle focus if Blabber's up there all the time with Fudge and they're picking good matchups and he's, you know, trying to go for these really aggressive plays? Is that going to lead him to having lots of deaths? Are these kind of things, you know, going to be issues for the team? I am super, super curious what Cloud9 is going to do with drafting, because they definitely have the Lucian Nami disease. And if that's not curable, I think that's going to be problematic for playoffs.
So here's the thing. It's in a best of series, right? Like, you can reverse sweep even if you're just so sure that Lucian Nami is good for the first two games, right? Like, in a best of one, you go in with your game plan. If it doesn't work, like, sucks, you know, we lost. But with a BO5, like, you have to consistently keep doing the same thing and losing to actually lose the entire series, right? Usually people will change their strat if they go down 0-2. They'll be like, you know what, this was working in scrims, but clearly it's not working, we need to change it up. So
you go to the patient that has the Lucian Nami disease and you're like, well, you know, I know you've got this Lucian Nami disease really bad, but you see, we just lost with it. So now are you willing to not
game? I mean, if this is game two, they go, no, dude, like, it had nothing to do with the pick. I was winning lane, and then we took this horrible fight. And then after the second game, you're like, you have to start, like, appealing to their ego. You go, bro, we suck. Are you sure you can carry hard enough on Lucian? Like, maybe like a Smolder or something would let you, the superstar, carry us hard enough? And they're like, fine, I'll just try Smolder, and they get 30 kills, dropping like 6 Pentas, and it's just, maybe we keep doing that.
Game one, that's Lucian Nami loss. That's a game good two, strat. Lucian Nami loss. Game three, they're like, okay, let's make a change. Lucian Melio. Yeah.
That's a lower bracket run right there.
It'll be interesting. I mean, there beyond the Lucian Nami stuff, oh God, what was the game? It was against IMT. Their most recent game against IMT, where they had like 4 melee into Talia Ziggs and stuff, and they got just absolutely clapped.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that draft sucked. And whether or not it's the players asking for it or the coach asking for it or whatever, they have issues, I think, with their champion picks and the stuff that they're playing. And I think that is a big concern for me, you know, looking at Cloud9 going in. And I think you even touched on, you thought, oh, JoJo, like, he's so good on Azir. My understanding is Azir is off for all of the playoffs. So
yeah, that sucks.
If that's supposed to be like a band-aid for some of their problems and some of their issues, not going to be there.
Also, I think the other side of this coin is not just Cloud9 drafts negative. It has been 100 Thieves have had some really good ones. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've probably mentioned too many times even the Aatrox counter into Shopify Rebellion when they were doing all tanks.
JoJo might not be able to blind pick Sion.
Yeah, like, holy, that is, that's, Azir disabled is one thing, but not being able to blind pick Sion, that is game losing. No, but I feel like they have been really versatile, you know, even just beyond that. Quid has played all sorts of different champions. His Talia even was some of the best as well. River has a really good game. Talia, so they have a lot of, like, flex picks as well.
Yeah.
I just think that this team has so many different ways they can go, and their bottom lane has, while they haven't really been like super played to, they've also been quite good at, like, you know, playing the weak side when Sniper needs ganks up top side, or
they show up to,
you know,
team fights and action they is going well elsewhere the
and their bottom lane has been pretty versatile as well. So this is mostly going to be really fun times as far as, do we get to continue the trash talking? Are all the teams talking about 100 Thieves scrims finally going to be vindicated in playoffs? And do they finally get their haha moment, or do 100 Thieves get to keep on bringing Crocs in and dancing on them. And
I mean, it's a super important series, I think, for the perception of the teams, right? Because clearly the pros are all on one side. The public, I think, is like a little bit undecided. Like, oh, do we believe the pros? Do we believe what we see on stage? If 100 Thieves win this, it's like, all right, you beat the allegations, and people are going to like start seeing some legitimacy to their run and start believing in this team a bit more. If they go into playoffs after having a really good regular season, get just turbo stomped in the first round, people are like, never mind. It was just a fluke. Like, it was just BO1s. It was just, you know, they didn't deserve it or whatever. So I do think it's a super important series for them. I could see this series going either way. I think, you know, if the Cloud9 you kind of like believed in your mind was going to be there at the beginning of the season shows up, then I think this is like really, really hard, 400 Thieves. Cause I can see how, okay, Quid could be neutralized
by JoJo.
I'm
going to say, though, they're not. I'm going to say that's not going to happen.
That team's dead.
It's been a meme of our Cloud9 back.
Yeah.
And even when they came back from the break and won their first game.
They were back-ish.
They were back on that game. But the very follow-up game, they still won. But it was like they started Baron a bunch of times while they had the huge advantage on scaling. And they almost got themselves.
Are they almost back?
Yeah. Into a terrible spot. And I don't think you flip that switch instantly. So the goals that everyone had for them or the, you know, what everyone originally perceived this team to be, I feel like is going to be out of reach. They might still be better. But I don't think they're going to have that super team level of play that people were expecting at the beginning of the season. Maybe they get to that over the course of playoffs.
I mean, and look at Energy last split, right? It was like 9-9 regular season, not that good.
Yeah.
Went Super Saiyan in playoffs, then did well internationally. So it's like you can never really know how it's going to go. I think it is a difficult one to predict.
Especially after this last, like coming out of this Super Week, if someone's bringing you like a presentation, they've got their PowerPoint set up and they're trying to explain to you what we just saw from Cloud9, and then they're taking that and they're extrapolating to super team godlike. This is how they're going to win the entire split. I'm like, what? I'm not following. I'm not following this. Maybe after this series, you know, and we have some more data points.
Sniper gets 7 solo kills against Cloud9.
I hope not.
But yeah, it's I mean, that's what makes it really fun and exciting to watch, though, because you know, you are almost expecting some upsets. You're like, when is it going to happen? When is it going to, you know, turn on for this team?
Yeah, I actually going in just from like what I saw on stage, I definitely feel like I'm pretty worried for Cloud9, and especially from their bot lane. I just don't think the bot lane has been good. And I know I've seen some discourse online where people are now just kind of like blaming Vulcan and like, ah, oh, well, you know, he's not good this split, but like, you know, it's the new support's fault. And I feel like at a certain point, it's also on Berserker, right? Like where, you know, he needs to be able to perform too. Both these guys need to be able to figure out a way to make it work. Because Vulcan also for him, it's tough because he's coming off of this FlyQuest stuff with Prince where things kind of fell apart there. But it just seems bizarre because it's like Vulcan was so good for so long, won championships with multiple teams, was, you know, arguably like the best performing support in the league over this like couple year span. Between like Cloud9 and EG and whatnot, and then has had, you know, a couple showings in a row that have been really rough. So I think it's definitely important for like him and his career too to be able to kind of get things turned around and get things working, because it's like people are quickly able to like say, oh, well, the Prince thing was just a fluke, but like if it also doesn't work with Berserker, then it starts to be like a bit of a pattern for him, but also, you know, for Berserker, who hasn't really been performing nearly as well.
I always just love watching Blabber and River play against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're pretty different styles, and River is, you know, always trying to like. He literally had a game where he walked in by himself, level one, blind, into the enemy red, and was able to like just barely bypass the like level one that they had set up, and then he steals red and then ganks bottom lane from behind level two, and you're like that's some solo queue shit. Like, what in the world just happened? And he's doing this on LCS stage, and then Blabber is almost always like super efficient. Full clearing into also efficient, like either covering gank or, you know, pushing lane ahead or whatever. So it's really fun to watch these two junglers clash always. I feel like both of them are so smart, and they just approach the game a little bit differently. So I'm super excited to see a full best of five between them, because that's where you really get to see the mind games go. If you do have like level two ganks, you know, one game, and then they completely switch it up the next game, and you get into some scenarios where like it's a three quadrant like complete run over one game, and then the next game the other jungler just absolutely smashes them. So I think that's where I'm most excited for this matchup. I say that though, and then we're also looking at like top lane where Sniper has already solo killed
Fudge.
I think
the whole top side of the map is really exciting. Like Quid versus JoJo is hype. I think Lava versus River is really, really hype. And I think Fudge versus General Sniper is super hype, right? Like General Sniper is on one of the most crazy tears over these last couple of weeks. So if he can bring that performance into playoffs, people have got to stop doubting him, right? Because the pros obviously were not hot on him coming into the league. He had a really good regular season. Mm-hmm. People are still thinking that they're frauds. So this is such an opportunity, I think, to really disprove all
the players. after this series, everyone has been waiting to say I told you so when 100 Thieves flop. But if they beat Cloud9 in a best of five.
That's huge.
On top of being almost first place in the regular season, just losing the head.
Their tweet was really just funny, the head by to the head. Way, when they tweeted out, first place secured, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, and then FlyQuest wins after, and they actually get second.
Head to head, by the way, FlyQuest had beat them both times in the regular season, so that's why they got that. But I feel like if after you do that, like if you win the best of five over Cloud9, then the I told you so's gets real quiet.
All right, what are you predicting?
Oh man!
After all that, do we just predict everyone just predicts Cloud9?
I'll say Cloud9. This?
I know you're gonna for sure.
All right, I'm going to go 100 Thieves. Honestly, because I was on the waiting room, our pre-show, the final day.
Yep.
And I was all about the 100 Thieves wagon and defending it. So I'm going to put my prediction where my mouth is and go with 100 Thieves. Obviously, I'm worried about the things that everyone's been telling me all year long about scrims, but I say we ride the party bus.
All right. I think I'm probably on Cloud9 side too. This to me is, I actually hope the 100 Thieves wins, to be honest, just because I want them to be able to kind of like, disprove all this stuff that has been happening all year. But I am still kind of feeling like, I could see a lot of ways that Cloud9 could prepare for this and shut them down. Mm-hmm. And I do think if Sniper is shut down and JoJo can kind of like neutralize Quid in the mid lane, because he's obviously a really strong laner. Blabber, I think, is really good at playing the style where he's just kind of answering what his opponents are doing. Like if he's just answering ganks from River, I don't know that 100 Thieves bot lane is going to be this like big carry force that can kind of get it across the finish line.
I mean,
I feel like it has to be their top
100 Thieves won with Shaco jungle, Veigar mid, and the Veigar didn't even build a death cap. And I was just like, you know what? They're having so much fun. I feel like the atmosphere on 100 Thieves is also going to be a big advantage when you're going into playoffs and best of five scenario. The atmosphere has to be, happier for this team. It has to be so good for practice.
I'm sure Cloud9 is stressed.
Cloud9 probably stressed as hell.
I mean, that's a really good point, because I remember in their regular season game where 100 Thieves had that crazy comeback against Cloud9, Berserker got a pento with Zeri, and then I remember specifically there was some play in top lane where I think 100 Thieves started their comeback, and even though they were really behind, like Quid was still laughing his ass off like while dying or something. And so to me, that's always the sign of a good team, is one that's, not really worried about what's going on in the game. Like, not even worried about if they lose. And, people online like to be like, oh, if you're laughing after a loss, like, that's the worst thing ever. But realistically, like, you just kind of accept what's going on and you're just having fun with your team. And like you said, if they've been losing every single scrim, maybe they're not a team that's going to tilt in playoffs if it goes bad. Maybe they're, like... To me, I think that is actually a really big plus for 100 Thieves.
Yep.
And so, maybe that could be the difference.
I feel like that's a big reason why you guys got so many fans in the original Cloud Nine with Sneaky and Balls and Lemonation. Like, you guys had such good vibes, and like, comedy was also a big part. You're winning and you were funny and having fun. That's it's like the recipe, the all-star recipe.
I always think it's so funny when people are like, ah, this guy's laughing after a loss, like he doesn't care, like
Nisky smiling,
he doesn't want it. I always felt like from the like pro side of it, like playing with teammates, if you had someone that could make you laugh after a loss, that was such a good thing to have for a mental reset to go into the next game. It is not good to just spiral into depression after a loss and be like, no laughing, like we just embarrassed ourselves, like what are you doing, we're horrible, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, that is not going to make you play better, or at least I'll speak for myself, that was not going to make me play better. That was going to make me play way worse. It was way better just like laugh it off. Oh my God, like what were we doing, guys? Like, how, you know, that was, did you see that stupid play I made? That was so funny, you know? Like, reset, go to the next game.
It's also nuanced because it can go too far if someone is always laughing stuff off and never takes criticism seriously.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is always the shades of gray rather than going either way. As long as someone, like, laughing and being able to move past a tough situation on stage in a best of five so you can get into the next game is very important. And then also that same person being able to take practice time and review time seriously.
For sure.
And make the improvements is like, that's the dream combination.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we have FlyQuest TL as our Friday matchup. And this is one I think probably most people are going to be more on the same page with. I think FlyQuest come in as pretty heavy favorites. Mm-hmm. Obviously, their first place team. They're going up against TL, who's fourth. I think TL's carries have been really struggling, and I think that's, you know, kind of universally agreed upon. FlyQuest also does have a lot of experience, especially in their top side, where you're like, okay, these guys have done it. They've done it before. They're already looking better in the regular season. TL, I think, is a threat, and it's a team that pros do respect. Like, they're kind of almost on the opposite side. This, when they were talking about it on the pros episode, where people are like, ah, you're always more scared of TL because there's like some big names, and you know that if they step up, they can make something happen.
TL is, I feel like for several years now, is the team that takes practice the most seriously. I always hear about them being in triple box scrims more than any other team. Which is like, well, then who are they scrimming against? I guess the other teams like take turns, like, all right, fine. You know, Team Liquid's always asking for another block. It's your turn this week or whatever, you know, doing the extra duty. But they are always the team in Champions Queue as well when that had life in it. they were the ones putting Champs Queue on life support by getting their academy players and doing Champs Queue games of basically 10 Team Liquid players. It would be like 9 Team Liquid players and then, you know, some academy player from a different team or something. They were always trying to get these serious practice environments. And that's why I always feel bad for them when they can't make it happen on the LCS stage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this split is actually very good for them, I feel like. You know, making it to fourth.
But it's definitely trended downwards, it feels
It's just... you know, because you always like to see like hard work rewarded, right?
Yeah.
But it does feel like they are just clawing for every win, and there haven't been a lot of super easy wins for them. You know, there's not like super big blowouts, I feel like, in the majority of the games.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about it in the beginning where Liquid has been playing scaling comps for the majority of the split. They don't seem like they're super confident just, you know, playing super aggressive early and choking a team out and just winning on like a 25-minute soul or whatnot. So I think that is going to give FlyQuest probably an edge going into the series as far as preparation, because APA is a player who's been getting a lot of criticism on TL, and, you know, he has been struggling at times. He's been making some mistakes that can cost his team a lot. So I think going up against Jensen is going to be super hard for him, because I think Jensen's just been having one of his best splits this year.
And he's a monster mage player. So it's like if they're playing mages all series.
Exactly. I think that, you know, depending how the draft goes, APA is not really going to want to play something that's like super good early game. And I think Jensen, you know, probably play like Orianna, Tristana type champs and just have Pryo, and that'll make the game really easy for FlyQuest to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the thing that's making it hard for me is I'm struggling to see, like, what is the big X factor? What is the big, like, kind of like area where TL, you know, should be able to take over in a series? And that's why I'm finding it hard to believe. I think that TL can win this one. I think Impact has had a really good season, but I think Wuppo has been super solid as well. I think that Jensen is basically just like APA, but a lot better, at least as far as how they perform this split, where they both want to play similar things, do similar things. But Jensen, I think,
Jensen's blowing out the Ziggs and the Aurelion Sol.
Well, control mages, right? Like, I think he's going to play Huey. I think he's going to play, you know, Orianna. I think he's going to play, like, Dahlia and stuff like this. Like, he's going to play, you know, a similar style of champion, but he's just been so much better in team fights. He's been so consistent. Yawn, I think, has struggled with consistencies. I don't think that FlyQuest bot lane are super consistent either. I think they're more up or down, but I think that they are, like, you know, able to play to a kind of like a similar level. And then I think Inspired has just been so good. And I think Inspired makes it harder for MT, who I feel like MT is more in the, like, River and Contracts camp of, like, trying to do some crazier stuff. But I think Inspired is just so good at actually being able to kind of, like, shut that down and answer that play style. He's much more in the, like, Blabber style of, you know, kind of just farming and answering plays, going for, like, high percentage plays and being able to, like, execute really well on them. So I don't know. I think it's going to be really, really tough for TL. But yeah, I'm just struggling to see where their kind of, like, X factor or win comes from.
Yeah, it is weird for TL because I think both, like, just the play styles of the players on their team, like, both Impact and Umpty, I think, are players who are really good at enabling the rest of their team, like, providing for their carries, making space, giving a lot of resources to their carries. But then, you know, Yawn and APA haven't really been looking like, you know, top of the standings type carry players, right? Like, they haven't been able to perform every time their team needs them to. So that obviously makes the game hard, right? Because if you're, like, sacking jungle camps, like, you're not playing for yourself. You're, like, Impact's doing a lot of roam timers, but then those resources you're giving your team are not amounting to much, then you're just kind of, like, taking an L, which is just unfortunate.
Yeah, and Impact has never really been that guy where it's like, oh, we're going to play, like, Alfari style and, like, just Umpty's going to dump everything and put it into Impact, and Impact's going to play hard carry style and just try to carry the series. Mm-hmm. That's never really been his MO. I do think he can have some good carry games, but I just don't really see that working for TL. So I do think it's going to require APA and Yana to step up. If one of those players can, like, have a really good series or be that person that they can play towards and be that, you know, the big carry threat, I think that's the way that TL wins. But, you know, based on what we saw over the last couple of weeks in the regular season, that has been tough.
I just think the styles are also so mismatched and bad for Team Liquid. FlyQuest have been a team that are super duper controlled and is insanely confident in their team fights in mid game. Mm-hmm. Like, their directive has been classic Jensen, you know, farming mid lane mage. Sometimes he even gets, you know, kills early on. You know, that's great. That's a bonus, but that's not, like, what they're going for. Their Wuppo has been pretty outspoken about how, you know, he views a lot more of these top lane champions towards their mid game and towards their late game. And their team fighting has been insane. Whether they come out of early game with a small deficit or usually pretty even slash ahead, then they just always blow open, you know, fights around third dragon or whatever it is, or taking down the full ring of outer towers. I feel like their team fights have been so good, and Team Liquid have had some stinker team fights. So, you know, sometimes, like, positioning, you know, it feels like we are, like, sandbagging on or just piling on the carries, but a lot of times, you know, it is the positions of the carries that matters tremendously in these. And there's been a lot of ones where, you know, they're just too far up, they're too easy to kill for the opponent teams, and I feel like FlyQuest is going to be able to take advantage of that. Their mid game has been super duper good this split.
Is everyone on the FlyQuest side then for predictions?
Yep. Probably.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I figured.
All right, good luck, underdogs.
Yeah, good luck, underdogs. All right, we also have Energy and Dig we can kind of touch on quickly. They're waiting in the lower bracket. Obviously, Energy coming off an absolutely horrendous final week. 0-4. Yeah. They went into it 6-5, came out of it 6-9, yeah. Which is pretty brutal. And a sixth seed has never won the LCS. It has never actually happened before. A couple fifth seeds have done it, including Energy. They were fifth seed last split when they actually won the title. But they're going to be starting in the lower bracket as the sixth seed. And then Dignitas, obviously starting as the fifth seed, will be awaiting the loser of Fly TL. So yeah. Based on our predictions, we would be assuming it would be Dig versus TL, and then Energy versus 100 Thieves or Cloud9. But you know, two of us are predicting Cloud9, so based on our predictions, it would be them versus 100 Thieves. So
it's also so rough for Energy because I even talked to a couple of them after the weekend, and Dokla was so sick this weekend. You know, he was in the urgent care like literally right before. You know, the day before they come in for the beginning of Super Week, that we had that pause even on stage for a while. He powered through, but it remained like pretty rough for them. That being said, like, how much can you write off?
That.
Because they also have had a lot of games just during the regular split where they're really struggling. Some of their wins are, if you look back at the win column, you're like, oh, okay, you know, not that bad. But a lot of them were like, whoa, we got super far behind and then had to make, you know, some crazy comeback. So it's, I definitely feel for them. It's very dicey. They have constructed this year an even more powerful underdog story than last year, I would say. So maybe it's something where they came into this year and all our talk was about, oh my God, how are Energy going to do now that they have all these expectations on their shoulders?
Not so well.
So they decided, oh shit, we can't win with expectations. So we're just going to be real bad and like come in at the very bottom of playoffs. They got rid of all the expectations. Now we get to start from the bottom again. Now we get to reclaim our underdog status. Is it actually Fivehead, you know, genius narrative creation for the team? No.
I mean, if Shopify was a tiny bit better this weekend, they wouldn't have even made playoffs, and they would have been only the second defending champs ever to not make playoffs the following split. It happened once with TL after Doublelift left after their title run.
But consider this. They're the non-rational gamers. The counter logic lives on.
I just feel like, I don't know, at least from the outside looking in and kind of my perception is I feel like they lost the kind of like vibes a little bit of like, it's like, yeah, they've had some ups and downs, but like they're all on the same page and they're good buddies and they're this and they're that. It feels like they are just not on the same page in game so often. And that's more what makes this split feel different to last split, where I feel like last split, they would lose games, but they would like, it felt more that they were on the same page. They would just do something stupid and they would like take a fight they shouldn't take, but they would take the fight together and lose. This split, it feels like so much of the time you can just see the conflicting stuff in game. And we heard right from the beginning of the split that when Hughie came in, they had found there's some difficulties, you know, incorporating him into the team because he had led his team on Golden Guardians and he had a very clear way he wanted to play the game, and other players at Energy had a very clear way that they wanted to play the game, and it wasn't necessarily aligning. And it feels like there's kind of two camps almost within the team, and you can see that within their games. I mean, I think the Lilia game was like a really easy example, again, that I touched on earlier. But there's so many examples throughout the split. Like, just go back and watch their four games this weekend. There's so many times where it's like, half of them are setting up for a fight. Half of them are trying to pull away. Half of them are trying to go to a side lane. The others are trying to go mid and push up for dragon. You know, it's like, it never feels like they're really fully on the same page. And that is my biggest concern. It's like, can you fix that overnight when you couldn't fix that the entire split?
Yeah, I think touching on the support role swap, I think has been really hard for Energy. Not because, like, obviously Hughie's a great player and all, but sometimes it's just like the way your players fit together doesn't work out too well. Because I know that generally, like back on 100 Thieves, when Hughie and FBI played together, they were almost an entirely bot side focused team. I remember like almost every game they'd be having Closer come either gank bot, dive bot early. And so I think it might be the case where everyone on Energy wants to be getting resources, right? Because before the split, they were kind of I would say more of a top side team. They had like Ignar do a lot of roams. and it was just, they were known for having like Dokla and Palafox just pick like, you know, carry champs in the top side and play through them. And now maybe they're trying to play more bot side stuff, and it just feels like the team is not, no one on the team is playing particularly well. I think they're maybe like slightly confused, trying to figure out their identity and whatnot, and everyone's probably a little uncomfortable. You know, sometimes you'll fall into this rut where it's like you want to be agreeable, you want to do it, like you want to play to help your teammates, but it doesn't really make sense to you, so you do what you think you're supposed to do, and you know, it doesn't work out that well. And then it can lead to tilt and whatnot. So I don't know if that's going on, but they definitely don't look very cohesive watching them. So maybe something like that is.
Yep. Definitely going to be rough for both of the lower bracket teams. I feel like Dignitas have a better aura around them, and they're yeah. going to have the mental advantage as far as, you know, the team atmosphere that we've been talking about. Tomo is coming off a pentakill, and it feels like the, I guess, focus, or, you know, everybody being on, you know, on board with what they want to do in game as far as team fights and how they want to execute their game plan is like the opposite story here for Dignitas than for NRG. It feels like that has actually been a strength for this team. And that them really playing like better than the sum of their parts, you know? Yeah.
I think Dignitas is also just as far as name power versus like how they actually play, like there is a huge discrepancy there. Like they don't have any big star kind of on this team, so to speak, but I think they actually played pretty well. I know as far as scrims go, they've been doing pretty well, and other teams do actually respect them. Even just on stage, like they have their bad moments. XU, I think, you know, has been a fun player to watch because he's come in, he's stayed really, really aggressive. That's, I know, one of his goals, that he wanted to kind of maintain his aggression that he had in you know, Academy and bring that to the LCS. It has resulted in some really bad moments, but it has resulted in some really good moments too. But I think back even this weekend to their FlyQuest game, they were up 3-0, had a gold lead, and then just had like a couple colossal ints where they like took a fight they shouldn't take. Then, you know, Tomo tried to follow up on this engage that XU was going for and tried to, like, you know, that went bad. Then they had another one around bot lane where Tomo had like a massive shutdown and tried to like stay around and like save someone, but gave up a 600 gold shutdown after. Like, you know, it was just like a couple of bad moments, and then the game is like, you know, off the rails. But they were really close to actually being in a position to win that game. They had a game, their last game against Cloud9, I want to say. I recall being like a similar situation where like they had a number of losses that were like in their control, and they made some silly choices and ended up losing it. But like even with that, they still finished in fifth. I think they did a lot better than people were expecting, myself included. And I've been pretty happy watching a lot of their players. Like, it's weird to say this, but like Rich has almost been the biggest disappointment for me, just because I had high expectations for him from last split, but he has been pretty kind of silent. But I think Tomo and Isles have done a good job. XU has had some silly moments, but like he has stayed aggressive and has had some really good games as well. And I think Dove has quietly been like one of the most solid players you know, in mid lane. So I think this team is like pretty legit. Can they beat one of the teams that'll get knocked down to them? I don't know, but I don't think Dignitas is a joke. And I think that one of the things that has made them pretty solid, and one of the things that has just made the league feel more competitive in general, is that there's no just like trash laners in the league anymore. And I think that's something that hasn't necessarily been true in the past, like where the bottom tier teams often just lost purely off of their laning being so poor. Mm-hmm. Like that just doesn't seem to really happen in the LCS anymore, which I think is one of the reasons that things have felt so competitive. So the question to me for Dignitas is like, can you know, improve your mid game decision making and avoid some of these kind of like silly engages and silly choices that have been a bit of their Achilles heel? Because I do think, you know, outside of that, they clearly have the skill as far as like laning and whatnot to be able to compete with some of these other teams.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us for now. Thank you for watching this episode of The Dive. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of The Dive. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any podcast platform. And make sure you send us your questions on Twitter with the hashtag TheDiveLOL. We might do another community episode later on in the year, and we would use those for that. Also, be sure to tune in this week for playoffs starting March 14th. It starts on Thursday. It is 1 p.m. Pacific, 100 Thieves taking on Cloud9. We will see you all there.